When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
What is happening? Welcome to the Nick and Alex Baseball Show, where we do not have an off season. I'm Nick Pollock, and I'm joined by the Stone Age, Alex Fast.
Stone Age. They just shaved. So I don't know.
It's because Fast, you're living in the Stone Age without a mechanical keyboard. And I got the greatest mechanical keyboard ever today. It is so good.
Yeah.
It is. But, you know what? Here we go. Hold on.
No.
Do you hear this?
Yes. It does sound very smooth. It sounds very buttery. I can't hear you because we can only hear the mechanical keyboard.
Whatever.
Now.
It's fine. I cannot be more excited to have this keyboard now.
That was some pure keyboard ASMR right there.
I know.
What is it about the mechanical keyboards that gets you so amped? What is it that
because
gets you so
amped? I type like 3,000-4,000 words a day. Uh-huh. And I want to, I mean, sometimes more than that in season. And I want the easiest way to do it. I want my fingers to live on clouds. And the sound.
What's your word per minute?
Typing with this, it was 110.
110. Wow.
Before it was like 95 to 100.
Wow.
I had a 10% increase just by having this keyboard.
Love a good typing game.
You know, and think about that. You know, it's a huge thing. I got this modded out. It's a JMK Pro. I have it lubed. I have the tape mod. I have the foam mod. I have the stabilizers replaced with Durec. I have some lovely Akko keycaps on it. Everyone is like, we have no idea what you're talking about, Nick.
No,
so welcome to the Nick and Alex baseball show. I know.
Everyone stopped as soon as you said it was lubed.
I know. So we went to First Pitch, Arizona. We had a fantastic time. It's a 4-day event held by Baseball HQ. They did a wonderful job. Brent Hershey, Ray Murphy, Ryan Bloomfield, the whole HQ crew, of course, Ron Chandler. Fast, you did a presentation.
I did a presentation. It was great. It was a very fun weekend. It was awesome to present, and I think that it went over well, which was very exciting. It was great to be able to catch up with so many people in the community, a very fun community, and watch some baseball. And for me, it was great to be cold again. That I very much enjoyed.
No, it was colder in Phoenix than it was in New York, and I was very, perturbed by that.
I loved it. I was living the dream. I hadn't had a chill in a minute. It was great. I was so happy.
Oh dear! Get Fast out of LA. But no, do you want to tell the people about what you presented at? Wait, did you write FPARI?
Yeah, I don't know why.
No
I keep
one
doing
calls
that.
It FPARI.
I know it's FPAS. I don't know why. I don't know why I did that. Fapari.
Fapari. Hey, mom, I'm going on a Fapari.
Fapari. What's your favorite kind of car? Not Lamborghini, more so Fapari.
What did you talk about at First Pitch Arizona?
I talked about pitcher volatility, something that I had been looking into for a while, thanks to the help of Justin Filteau, who's one of our fantastic data scientists here over at PitcherList. And looking at, you know, if we can, if there's a metric that we can use to determine game score. We had one moons ago and what's it called? VPR. And we took game score, which was redone by Tom Tango, and we, rather than using his formula, made it the sum of all of the run values from that start and the standard deviation between all of those game scores to determine who's volatile and who's not. Guys who are volatile were people like, or not volatile, were very consistent in a good way. Guys like Verlander, Max Fried was super, super consistent. And then the other end of the spectrum, guys like Chris Archer, who were consistent, but consistently poor. And then guys like Nathan Eovaldi, who were all over the place. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, a lot of good stuff. We saw a lot of good talks. I think one of the biggest takeaways I had from the weekend that Nick and I were talking about that we're probably going to institute coming into next year's analysis is downplaying the importance of a new pitch at spring training, but continuing to talk about velocity, it's more important to say, oh, wow, this pitcher is showing 2 miles an hour more on their four seamer, and it looks like they're sitting there at spring training, than it is to say, oh, this pitcher has a new curveball. Why? One, the velocity, that's likely going to stick, or has more of a chance of sticking. B, the other reason, the curveball, if it's a new curveball, might not stick. It could be just something they're playing around with. Maybe they throw it once or twice a game. We can't really, you know, the example of Lance McCullers appearing with a new slider is the exception, not the rule, right? Rarely right. do guys throw right. it and then make it their number one pitch. So yeah, that was a good takeaway thanks to a Dave Potts conversation with Vlad Sedler.
Yeah, Dave Potts. What about you? What'd you learn? I mean, Dave Potts, always listen when that guy talks. There's so many people like that. Vlad, you listen to him. Derek Carty and Eno were there. Oh, man, I was very, very fortunate to be able to have some fantastic talks with Eno about lots of things in the game. And Derek Carty, too. I mean, picking his mind about how he works with projections and the things he's working on and all of that. Really exciting stuff there. But yeah, I mean, that's a fantastic takeaway. Velo matters most, a new pitch type. I mean, I think of Tyler Glasnow's changeup, Chris Archer's changeup, you know,
yep,
not a huge deal. Ultimately they want to do it. I also remember actually Matthew Boyd throwing more changeups. I remember our excitement seeing him throw one against DJ LeMahieu in 2020 at the stadium, but yeah, then he also didn't have his slider after that because he overcompensated on it. Right. And then Tommy John, maybe that was really ultimately the reason. But that is certainly something to carry moving forward. I had some really great conversations with Ariel Cohen as well about, this was also in the context with Tristan Cockcroft and Derek Carty's panel about, risk for next year and who should we be taking as pitchers for next season. Also Rob Silver's win potential stuff was very interesting. This is all fantasy though. And I don't want to go too much more into that. Because this is not a fantasy show. This is a baseball show.
That's true.
Baseball show. And we're going to continue our tradition of this. And by the way, again, huge thanks, Brent Hershey and company, Baseball HQ, for that fantastic time. We are going to talk about free agents today. The World Series was also there. We'll talk about that quickly. And before we get to it, we have to have a mystery pitcher. And this week, Fast, this pitcher, 14-8, 178 innings, 2.88 ERA, 103 WHIP, 33.4% K rate, 7.3% walk rate, 32% CSW, 95.5 on the heater, 13th best, 15.5% swing strike rate, hard contact, a little more pedestrian at 34th, at 23%, just a 37% ground ball rate. Who do you think this pitcher is?
Is this a guy who is a free agent?
Yes.
Is a guy who is a free agent, because there are a few names that were kind of coming to mind, but I don't know if I think it's Carlos Rodon. I'm not sure if he reached that innings total. But
honestly,
I'm
surprised that you wouldn't know Carlos Rodon's stats like the back of your hand, considering how badly you want him.
What are you talking about? On the Orioles?
Yes, of course on the Orioles.
I don't know if I necessarily want him that badly.
Really, though? Who is the target for the Orioles this offseason?
Jacob DeGrom.
Interesting.
Yeah, and there are two rumors linking the Orioles to him.
Rumors?
Well, the first one I was like, okay, and then there were a few more accounts that were like, no, I'm getting
Dan Clark.
Some of that. Oh, God, I don't even say his name. He's such a
Can Dark? No.
Very close to making me have to beep out something I said. No, it was actually a reputable source who isn't made of worms and maggots. It was, there were two reputable sources that seemed to have come out with that. That's who I would want more than anyone. But we're getting too far ahead of ourselves. I do think it's Carlos Rodon. Because I don't think it's any of the other ones. I don't know if any of the other free agents reached that inning total either. Tyler Anderson might have, but there's no way he has that fastball or swing strike rate, and that ground ball rate would be twice as high. So yeah, I don't know.
We'll find out at the end. And quickly, World Series. I know you were actually happy, I believe, that the Astros won. I'm happy at least for Dusty Baker. And you know, I'm disappointed that the Phillies didn't come through. What are your quick thoughts? Because I have some thoughts.
I thought most importantly it was a very fun series. I did say Houston in six, so I was excited about that. I thought it was a very, very fun series that honestly, like, teetered back and forth. Like there were moments where you were like, even in game one, where you were like, wow, Philly's going to do this. Like they're actually going to do this. And then obviously moments in game three where you kind of felt that way too. You know, when they went up, you were like, okay, Philly's really going to be able to do this and be a great underdog story, you know? But then I think you do have to kind of give kudos to the Astros. We talked a little bit about this, in the CS preview, in the World Series preview, where I was like, I will be very curious to see how Houston deals with any adversity. You know, they've had days off and they've had to try and keep their momentum together, but like, sometimes when you're on a hot streak and then all of a sudden you get hit in the face in game one, I'm curious to see how you bounce back. Do you press? Do you try and make things happen that shouldn't happen? And after every loss, they just completely recomposed themselves and came back out the next night. And, you know, they had to deal with things that were, you know, Justin Verlander not being the way that he was supposed to be. I mean, you were talking about that for a while, about how you were likely going to see some regression, and we saw that in the playoffs. Lance McCullers tipping his pitches massively. Those are things that are really tough to overcome. But when you are that deep, right, when you have that much to your squad, you know, that's just unbelievable. It's very exciting to see Jeremy Peña get a World Series MVP and have the playoffs that he did, because it's always nice to highlight your young stars. And then to me, I very much understand why everyone is upset with Houston winning. I get it. Like, I'm completely empathetic to that fact. People feel like it's not a chapter that was closed because the punishment was not enough, nor do they feel like, you know, there were enough repercussions. And I am completely empathetic to that. I totally get it. I think where I'm at is, while Houston certainly cheated, I still think other organizations, I think they are scapegoated by other organizations and that they also have cheated. There have been plenty of organizations that have either been caught cheating, or we know that do cheat, or it has been said that do cheat. So I think this kind of shows that, like, this organization is not a fluke. They have been absolutely dominant for a few years now. And while the cheating thing is reprehensible and there should have been more consequences for that whatsoever, that is a good organization top to bottom who did what no other team could do this year, especially other high performers like the Mets and the Dodgers, which is put their money where their mouth is and win a World Series.
Well, Fast, you forgot the most important part. And that, I remember this distinctly. Everyone went off to the home run derby in First Pitch, Arizona, understandable, as game six went on.
Yeah.
And here I am at the bar with Sarah Sanchez. Fantastic.
It was awesome to meet.
Fantastic. Yeah. And Jenny Butler. And I'm getting excited. I remember leaping off the stool when the very first pitch of the game was Framber Valdez throwing a fastball 95 right at the bottom of the zone inside the strike zone and not getting a strike call on it.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited. I'm the only one in the bar that like leapt, because if Framber Valdez doesn't get the low strike call, think of like Dallas Keuchel not getting the low strike, how it just changes everything. And I saw that and I said, oh boy, it's going to be one of those. And eventually Framber got that call. But the sixth inning arrived. Okay. And tell me if you've heard this before. It's game six of the World Series. Your team is down 3-2. You are 70 pitches in. You've been pitching like an ace, the best pitcher on your team. You're up 1-0, or you're up by one run here. And the second that Wheeler allowed that second hit, it panned to the bullpen, or sorry, not the bullpen, the dugout. And oh my God, I didn't realize that Blake Snell was on the mound, because everyone in that bar shouted no. Yeah. I was screaming it as he went to take Wheeler out. This is the same exact poor decision that we saw with the Rays, the same exact one in 2020, where you have your best pitcher on the mound who did not make him. Even Snell actually made a mistake with the slider that caused the single. Wheeler threw great inside fastballs that resulted in hits, but especially the second one was a grounder that could have been a double play from Altuve. And they took him out of the game to throw in Jose Alvarado against Yordan Alvarez. Which is just astounding to me. Wheeler had just thrown an up and in four seamer up and in and gotten to pop out in his last at bat. And that was going to work again. There's no world where I believe that Jose Alvarado is the better pitcher in that situation than 70 pitches in Zach Wheeler. Now, I understand that there probably was a pregame conversation about Wheeler's health. There were concerns about it after his previous game with velocity way down. And we were thinking maybe we'll get five innings out of Wheeler in this one. This guy was cruising. It is game six of the World Series. You are up 1-0 in the most important situation. All of that is out of the window. Look at your guy on the mound. He has not lost his ability. He is still pumping 98 miles per hour. He was throwing 99 in the first inning. How on earth do you take him out? And what happens? Alvarado throws a fastball down and middle, not too far away from the one Robbie Ray served him in the ALDS. And what happens? They lose. It was over. It was 3-1 in a heartbeat, and it was done. I had no one outside of the most optimistic, blind fan truly believed in that moment the Phillies were going to win that game. All because of that one decision. Everything, the entire season is done because you removed the best pitcher on your team in the most important moment of your entire season. So yeah, I was really happy at the outcome fest.
I want to talk about that because I feel the same way about that I kind of do with the Snell thing, which is that like, so it's a third time. You could theoretically make the case that there's a third time through the order penalty.
No.
Right?
No.
It's not like bringing in Jose Alvarado is bringing in some schlubbo. This is a guy with like a 38% strikeout rate. Sure. But I don't know. I stick by my guns here, which is the same thing I've said last week when there were questions about other managerial calls. They just have more information than we do.
Okay. This is, you want to hear what the argument is, why we hear stuff like announcers on broadcast hating on, and they use the word analytics like it's venom.
Yeah.
You know, and I hate that. I hate that so much. Analytics is just information. All it is, just better information than we've had before. The problem that I have, and I think that they are having, then they're just not communicating it well, that I do agree with, is, this information is about general trends a lot of the time. Generally, Alvarez is worse in this location at this, you know, with this pitch or so. It does not take into account necessarily Robbie Ray's sinker in that location at that moment. It also doesn't take into account what's going on at the moment. A lot of times that stuff is just, you can't just paint a broad brush. You have to see what's going on right in front of you. And that's what makes good managers excellent, is that they're able to assess the situation better than, you know, every nuanced moment. The nuanced moment is lost in that percentage that you get. And this was one of those nuanced moments that should have gone the other direction. But because the manager, Rob Thompson, didn't want to go against whatever plan was laid out before, he didn't do it. And I don't blame Rob for that. I really don't. There's a no-win situation as whatever, you know, you can't necessarily make the right call, but that is the part, that is the argument against them, and truly what is driving all of that rage against analytics. It's understanding the nuance of the moment. Actually, I talk about this, I know I'm ranting so much, but I'm so infuriated by it, about like in at-bat sequencing is actually what is most important is understanding the batter itself. They give you so many tells inside of that bat of what they want to hit. Eno was telling me this great thing about Pedro Martinez, saying how he sees the warm-up swings, you know, like Wilmer Flores, like, okay, I'm in the box, I'm going to take my little dry hack or something. He's literally telling with the bat where he wants the ball to go. Like, and Pedro's like, well, I'm not going to pitch it there. You know, you see a guy following a curveball down and away, that's an 0-2 pitch. He was looking for a curveball there, right? Like, he's telling you these things. And good sequencing, you can do the general book or so, but then there's these extra bits that you should not leave at the table. You have to take advantage of those. And this was one that you had to take advantage of the fact that Wheeler was not degrading. He was pitching still at an elite level, and you cannot take him out there. You just can't do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I also think, well, there's a few things. One, those arguments against analytics always crack me up, because when the analytics work, no one ever says anything, which just always
well,
cracks
the outcome
me up.
Like, never. But there, yes and no. I mean, yeah, you say the manager always, if they make the right call, he's a genius. If he makes the wrong one, you know, the call doesn't matter. It's the outcome, right? Which I totally understand. But that's about trusting the process and the results. And I'm talking more about the process. And I think this is the kind of process that it needs to get recalibrated or at least scrutinized more.
Sure. That's a valid point. I think, too, that like it is first and third in a one run game. You bring in a guy who has a better ground ball rate, a better pitch to get ground balls, and a higher whiff rate. I'm just saying I understand it. He didn't execute. It was a terrible pitch and an unbelievable moment in World Series history.
First time in like 8 years that a home run has gone above the batter's eye in Houston?
It was launched. Like that was an unbelievable home run. He missed his spot terribly.
I think I screamed. I literally yelled at this bar. Oh, God.
I think about this conversation too is like, and you know this, and I know you know this, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but like, that's not why the Phillies lost. The Phillies lost because their middle of the order had one of the most atrocious performances in World Series history.
They got like, no hit, you know? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's that. Like, yeah, sure. This is the literal reason. This was the go-ahead run in the determining game of the World Series. But it didn't matter. It didn't matter. Like, they hit 154 or something. Like, it was insane. Like, it doesn't matter.
You do not take my favorite thing away from me fast. My favorite thing is watching a guy like Zach Wheeler dominate through a game, and they took it away from me.
Your favorite thing was on the bench. He started the day before.
Aaron Nola?
Yeah.
I don't rank Aaron Nola above Zach Wheeler fast.
In your heart?
Close right now. I mean, what's Zach? How many times have I told you 51% of a swing on the sinker? Okay.
They hit 161 in the World Series, the lowest team average for a World Series of six games since 1911.
Oh man.
Unbelievable.
Okay. I've gotten us off the rails. I apologize for my very long rants about mechanical keyboards and Zach Wheeler. This is supposed to be the free agent podcast. I hope you enjoyed that one. But we're going to talk about all these free agents, starting pitchers, shortstops, outfielders, relievers, first base, catcher after this quick break.
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
All right, and we're back. So we gotta go through this because we got like 40 minutes or so to go through all free agents. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to go through the major ones. I know you went over some starting pitchers. I also had a tweet that showcased a quick list of guys. What we're going to do in a future episode is really go team by team and say, all right, we think this team should be doing this or that. You know, two different ways of framing it from the players, and we're just doing a generalized one. We're not doing all of them here, guys. But we're going to do a brief one, the big ones, talk about those, and then we're going to go team by team and say, like, all right, this is their plan. This is what they're going to do. We're going to truncate that probably in two episodes of American League and National League. We'll get to that. That'll be the next 2 weeks for you guys. But now we're going to talk about the big guns. So starting pitchers, you wrote down here, it's Jacob deGrom, Carlos Rodon, Clayton Kershaw, Nathan Eovaldi, Chris Bassett, and Tyler Anderson. So let's talk about deGrom. You think he's going to be an Oriole?
I don't know if I think he's going to be an Oriole. I think it's made more sense than it's ever made ever, right? That team is going to need a bona fide ace because we don't know what's going to happen with Grayson Rodriguez. Obviously, there were a lot of fun flashes in the pan with Austin Voth, Jordan Lyles. You know, there's guys like Kyle Bradish who we don't know if they're going to take a step forward or not. Tyler Wells, what DL Hall is going to be. We'll get John Means back in the middle of the year. But this, I have said many times that I think the Astros are following the exact same formula that they did in Houston, which is like acquire an extremely deep farm Young. System that is predominantly yeah. made out of offensive players, and then go out and either trade for or sign free agents, like they did with Cole, like they did with Verlander. Now, with that said, they also did have guys like Framber Valdez and Lance McCullers Jr. who came up through their system.
I will say, you know, Ben Lindbergh made an excellent point a couple of years ago, being like, what's the most valuable thing in baseball? And it's youth. It's all youth.
Yeah, 100%.
Especially for teams where it's like, oh, yeah, they cost $550,000 a year
yeah.
and not millions. So the more youth you have, the better you're going to be in any situation. The Astros have so much with their international signings. Yeah. And that allowed them to, everyone says, oh, look at their payroll, it's so low, but it's like, yeah, but they got so unbelievably stocked in their production from non-free agents this year.
Yeah, I feel like the more talented youth you have, because the Washington Nationals have youth, but
yeah, there you go. Yeah,
not
productive youth.
I'm not even trying to be a homer too. I do think it's more realistic than we've talked about in the past for him to go. But it also does just make sense that like Cohen will open up the pocketbook. He does not care. He wants to win.
Right.
It's a fun owner. So it really wouldn't surprise me if he broke the bank and Jacob ended up back in a Mets uniform for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
What about you? Where do you think he's going?
I think he's got to go back to New York.
Yeah.
It just makes too much sense to me. The Mets didn't come through this year. They had every opportunity though. You know, still Scherzer and DeGrom were there for the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that often returns more success than it did this time. I think that happens. I wouldn't even be shocked if they went and got both of the first two here, DeGrom and Rodon, and just made a statement.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, that Scherzer, DeGrom, Rodon in the playoffs is going to be awfully hard to beat.
Yeah.
And that does take us to Rodon here. Look, the last year, we didn't know if the shoulder was okay. He signed this one-year deal with an option for 2023. Declined it. He's not a free agent. And just dominated. I mean, all concerns about his health were fine. He didn't degrade. He didn't slow down velocity wise. And now he's primed to dominate anywhere. Everyone kind of feels like, oh, yeah, right. He is not throwing 93. He's throwing over 95 velocity wise. So it's, yeah, Rodon looks primed for a major payday here fast.
Yeah. I am thinking, I'm just looking at their payroll. It would be interesting to see if he ended up in Toronto, as you know, Jose Barrios was not what they wanted him to be. Obviously have a very elite 1-2 punch with Kevin Gausman and Alek Manoah. They do have a good amount of money on the books for guys like Springer and Gausman. It's also not forget that Hyunjin Ryu in his age 36 season is about to have a $20 million payday. And Barrios coming in pretty hot too. I will be curious to see if they want to do that. They're also going to have to pay, you know, a lot of their young stars relatively soon in the next couple of years. I don't understand why they're not doing what Atlanta has done, which are some of the most team friendly deals and locked up a core that's going to be there and make them competitive for the next decade.
Sure.
But I don't know. I'd be curious to see if he ends up in Toronto.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Toronto's going to have to do something. I feel as if they've already done enough with their major signings. It's Manoah, Gausman, that, yeah, as you mentioned, they're going to have to pay for Bichette, Guerrero soon, and they can't just go get another big one because that will set them up for a really difficult time down the road. But maybe they can. I mean, they do need that one extra push, and Rodon could be that answer. Clayton Kershaw. Do the Dodgers pay for him?
I don't think so. I think this might be the year that he goes home, that he goes to Texas. Texas had a terrible rotation last year.
Except for John Gray. I love John Gray.
Some for Chark, for sure. They had the 25th. They were 25th in ERA among starters last year. Their payroll has some room. And also, I don't think Clayton Kershaw is going to particularly break the bank. You know, he has to know that you're not getting 170 innings out of Clayton Kershaw anymore. You're probably getting 120 out of 150. So, yeah, I think it would make sense for him to be like, yeah, sure, I'll take a 2-year deal at a relatively high AAV and pitch at home and call it a career.
Yeah.
So I think that would make sense.
That's possible if Texas is willing to pay that. I actually think the next guy, Nathan Eovaldi, might be a really good fit for them.
Well, that's a good point.
The decreased velocity was staggering, but he actually did okay. And regardless, 94 or so, as opposed to the 96 plus that we've seen from Eovaldi in the past. If he's all right to pitch, I can see the Rangers are kind of those teams that they take a little bit more chances and flyers on guys. If you remember Lance Lynn, they took a flyer on that. They took flyers on like Shelby Miller or so.
Sure.
And Eovaldi could fit the bill there in Texas. I wouldn't be shocked about that one.
I wonder if he ends up, this is just very off the cuff, I don't even know if I believe in this, but I wonder if he ends up in Chicago and the White Sox. Because you think about the Eovaldi, this is a guy that you probably want to be your 4 or 5, like maybe your 3, but you probably want him to be a back end dude, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, right. I mean, kind of because we don't know what the velocity is, right?
Totally. And he's an injury risk. It's just not a guy that's going to be able to consistently lead your organization. As I said earlier, he was inconsistently good. So a lot of blowups, a lot of good games. If Lucas Giolito writes his ship and then you have Cease, Lynn, Giolito, and Kopech, making Eovaldi, who might not also be that expensive, a number 5 in that division could be a nice little signing for them.
Yeah, that could work. What do you think about Chris Bassett?
Chris Bassett. Okay, so this is interesting. What are you getting out of Chris Bassett? You're probably getting a good amount of innings, even though he had some injuries this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're getting consistency.
I think you're getting an SP2, SP3 out of this. And I think Chris Bassett, wherever he does sign, is going to be at a discount, and I love it. I think the Yankees should be all over Chris Bassett.
The
fact that also Bassett was able to take care of things with the Mets organization inside of New York this year, he was fine with it. To me, he's like an upgrade of Tyone. Essentially is what Chris Bassett is in my book. And the Yankees could use that. You know, they don't need everybody to be this, oh my God, it's the greatest guy ever.
Sure.
We have Cole, we have Severino, we have Cortez. We're fine. We need a really rock solid 4, and that is Chris Bassett to me for that team. I mean, you can even say he's a number 3. I think that'd be a really good fit.
I'll say he goes to Minnesota. I think that could be a lot of fun for him. Yeah, that makes a good amount of sense because they also have they've got a lot of high risk, high reward guys, right? Sonny Gray, Joe Ryan, a little bit more high reward than high risk. Tyler Mahle, Kenta Maeda coming back, and then Bailey Ober as their number 5. I don't know. I think that could be an interesting fit for them. It would make sense because it could get him a good amount of innings, should be able to feast in that division. That might be a fun signing for them. He's also,
schedule is different. Don't forget that. That's a great schedule.
Point. I love that. God, that is wild? A great point. Tyler Anderson is also another interesting one because he's one of those dudes where it's like, are the change-up changes that he made in Los Angeles because of Los Angeles, or like, meaning will they be able to stick without the coaching that he has? I always think it's like an interesting conversation when you teach a pitcher something new. Does the coaching staff help them retain it, or is it like, oh, I've got a new tool in my toolbox? You know, because pitchers lose the feel for pitches all the time. And if they go to a different team, are they going to be able to help them find it?
Defense is the biggest question with Tyler Anderson. 15% changeup usage increase, tons of success with those, a better pitch and throwing up more often. But is that defense going to be the same if he leaves LA? I think, honestly, they re-sign him. It makes all the sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. But you know who would also be interesting now that you bring that up? Like, what other organization signs kind of unsexy pitchers or trades for unsexy? Yeah, the Cardinals.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it very much could work. I wonder what the rotation is going to look like. We were thinking that Wainwright would retire. He's not. He's coming back. Flaherty will be there, hopefully healthy this time. You see Jordan Montgomery, you see Miles Michaelis, and then Hosie Quintana is now a free agent. So there is a fifth spot that could be Tyler Anderson.
Steven Matz.
Steven Matz. So then there you go. Are they going to do it then?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. There are a lot of names there. Are there other, I mean, obviously there's Justin Verlander.
There are so many.
Justin Verlander said that he's, well, we don't know, right? He could be a free agent still, right? He hasn't made a decision because he just went
to quite. It's possible. I imagine he signs 2 years with the Astros at this point. There's some talk about him. Was it him going down to Florida, signing there? But I don't think that's going to happen. You have Jameson Taillon, Tywin Walker, Ross Stripling, Andrew Heaney, Michael Wacha, Mike Clevenger, Corey Kluber, Shawn Manaea, Michael Lorenzen, Jose Quintana, Noah Syndergaard, Martin Perez, Johnny Cueto, Rich Hill, Kyle Gibson, Zach Eflin. These are other options out there. There's also Senga. I'm coming over, and possibly others as well. We'll talk more about all of those in another podcast. Nothing too game-changing. Ross Stripling's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Could certainly help. I can tell you right now somebody is going to sign Jameson Taillon to a cheap deal. It's going to be like the Tigers or something like that. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens there. I could see Lorenzen going to like the Miami Marlins or not Miami. I'm sorry. Like Tampa Bay. Miami's not going to sign a starter. There's no reason. They have too many.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're going to be some interesting little deals. He maybe goes to Seattle actually for their number five spot. If it's not Lorenzen or Marco Gonzalez. But what's the difference, I guess? What's the point? So we'll see there, but we'll move on to shortstops. We'll start with Trey Turner. I mean, it feels like, obviously Aaron Judge, and we'll talk about that in a second, but Trey Turner is the other big domino waiting to fall.
Yeah.
Who do you got for him?
Ooh, that is, I mean, it's a really fun year for shortstops, right? There's a lot of really high-end ones, which I think is, and I would be curious to know because I have no idea. I would be curious to know what the difference in like front office mindset is about these top guys, right? Because we have, oh my God, where's my brain? We have Trey Turner, we have Carlos Correa, we have Xander Bogaerts, we have Dansby Swanson. They're all within like 2 years of one another, which is pretty amazing. And the one who probably has the worst track record of health is the youngest in Carlos Correa. All of them are within a few war of one another. So the reason I bring this up is because I wonder if people are like, well, why would we break the bank for Trey Turner if we can have Xander Bogaerts cheaper and then sign someone else? I do think that Trey Turner is the best of this bunch.
I mean, that's what John Hamm told me.
Oh my God. I do think there are, you know, some teams that could use the boost. Like, if we look at who got the, let's take a look at who got the least amount of production from the shortstop position.
I'm sorry. Can you say that again? That word, that's B O O S T.
B O O S T.
Can you say that word again?
Boost.
Yeah, the way you said it was the most Maryland Baltimore accent I've ever heard.
Boost.
From you.
Boost.
Yeah. Yeah, you said that. I haven't heard it from you.
That's pretty wild. I've never.
It came out.
Who needs the biggest boost?
Yeah.
That is very funny.
I heard there was an applicant from Maryland that had the accent.
My favorite.
Like, this is what Alex had was talking about. And
that's the only. The only reason I would ever want to sign Shohei Ohtani, aside from his, like, you know, skill, is just so we could hear, like, Shohei Ohtani. Ohtani going to pitch down in Baltimore. Ohtani, let's go.
Oh, my God, you're clipping now. You are.
You're making a Baltimore accent.
I implore everybody to go back and listen to Fast. Say it and see if you can hear it. Because it just all of a sudden, like, my ears perked up and said, what was that?
That's very
the
funny.
Subtlety of it. It just rolled in.
Boosted.
You know?
Here are the teams that could use the biggest boost in shortstop production. So all I did was go to Fangraphs and look at shortstop war. So even in the bottom 20, there are some teams that are playoff contenders, right? Baltimore, Seattle, Tampa Bay, the Yankees, and the Giants were all in playoff contention towards the end of the year and got below average war from their shortstop. The Angels are always going to be interested in signing people. They got minimal production. And then the rest is like, you know, Arizona, Colorado, Cincinnati, Washington, and Oakland. So not really, I doubt they're going to be in the market for any of these key four. To do it real quick, I imagine Correa goes to Baltimore. I think it's funny that there were those rumors last year, and the fact that we were better than people thought adds a little bit more substance to those. Plus the Astros reconnection kind of makes sense to me. I think Dansby ends up back in Atlanta. Unless they want to go all out for Trey, which I think would be interesting. But yeah, also it wouldn't be unlikely to have a Dansby Turner swap and have Dansby rejoin Freddie inside of Atlanta, LA, excuse me, and then have Trey Turner go over to Atlanta. They have the opportunity and the money thanks to all the very friendly contracts that they have. I guess they do still have a large payroll, but still, I think they could break the bank for him. Xander is the one I just don't know about. I don't know if Boston's going to continue with this rebuild, and I don't know why they would want to commit a lot of money to a 30-year-old if they are, so I'm not sure about him. What are you thinking?
I could see Atlanta getting Xander as they lose Dansby. Obviously, you're going to have somebody get replaced in L.A. For Turner. I think that's going to be Correa. And I want so badly for the Yankees to sign Trey Turner.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I want that. Oh boy. That's what I would go for, but I don't think it's going to happen. There's also been some rumors about the Mets getting Trey Turner. Then you might see Dansby Swanson as a Yankee. Something along those lines. I will be shocked if the Yanks do not go for somebody here. I hope it's not Carlos Correa. As a Yankee fan, I think Carlos Correa is not nearly as good as everyone gets touts for him. I think he's going to get worse. They're probably going to have Volpe move to second base. That means you move on from Torres. You move on from IKF. DJ goes plays third. You re-sign Rizzo. All that stuff. But this isn't the Yankee one. I'm just saying how one of these guys, I think Turner or Dansby Swanson, are my two favorites for that position for the Yankees. So and speaking of the Yankees, yes.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I was just thinking, when is the last time a Yankee stole more than 30 bases? I looked it up. I found the answer.
Ricky Henderson.
A trivia question for you.
No. Ricky Henderson.
When was the last time a Yankee stole more than 30 bases?
It was Henderson. That's all I got.
Gardner. No, it was not. Come on. You can.
Oh, no, no. Oh, no. I know this. It's Curtis Granderson.
Curtis.
2011?
It wasn't Curtis Granderson. He stole 25 in 11.
Oh,
well. It was a little bit more recent, not too much. It was 2014.
Was it Gardner?
Jacoby Ellsbury.
Oh, gosh. All
Jacoby
right.
Ellsbury
Thanks
stole 39.
Thanks for reminding me that he existed. But anyway, wonderful segue I had before you interrupted me was Aaron Judge of the Outfielders. I know you appreciate a segue, and I think that's the sentence that will hurt you the most.
You're right.
Is me saying you interrupted my segue.
You're right. I just had an image of you on a Segway riding through
knew
town.
You, I did too. I did too fast. And I wasn't going to bring it up. I'm amazed that you did. Aaron Judge, what's happening here? Are the Yankees going to do this?
I think the Yankees will. I think I heard a quote somewhere that said, if he does not choose the Yankees, it will not be because of money.
Oh, interesting.
Like, yeah, which would then lead me to believe that it's a two-team race between the Yankees and the Giants, and they'll offer a relatively similar amount of money. Both will be record-breaking, and he might just choose to play out in San Francisco. They definitely have the payroll, as they have a below-league average payroll, and the Yankees are top 10.
You think it's going to be record-breaking?
I think it could be. I mean, I think it's going to be a good amount of money. Record-breaking either in AAV or in length.
Yeah.
Probably AAV.
Okay, so it can't be length. I think the biggest knock on signing Judge is the age problem.
Yep.
Is that you see a guy like this is already trying to get better about injuries, and hey, has improved, but it still feels like, you know, watching him and Stanton play, they're both not going 100% on purpose. You can see it all the time. and it's okay. We're allowing this. I mean, look, the guy just had an 11 WAR season. You don't need him to do that. But it's one of those things. And it just feels like if the Yankees sign him, then it becomes this albatross contract in like 4 years.
Yeah, I agree. Shocked
if it's a length thing. Now, is he going to get more than $350 million, you think? Or more than $4 million? I don't know. $400 million, yeah.
The highest AAV for a position player right now is Trout at 35. So I don't know. I mean, I guess, yeah, in retrospect, it would be tough to think that he would get more than $35 million a year. It is kind of crazy to see that the second highest player in terms of offensive value, second highest player in terms of AAV on the offense is Anthony Rendon at $35 million. That is just bananas. Then you have Lindor, Corey Seager, Arenado, and then Miguel Cabrera wrapping up that contract. And then who others? The other two that are over 30 in terms of AAV are Mookie Betts and Manny Machado. You have to figure he joins that club. He joins the 30 million AAV club because it's a small
club. Yeah,
you got to
think that, of course. Absolutely. Yeah.
So the question is can he make more than Anthony Rendon? So yeah, maybe he doesn't make 35, but you got to figure it's between 30 and 35.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a, you know, he's not going to accept like a 3 to 5 year deal is the thing. He just wants to be done with it at this point. So I wonder if it's front loaded, something along those lines. I don't know. As a Yankee fan, I know it's really hard to think who is the face of the Yankees if it's not Aaron Judge. And that's really hard. And that's the biggest reason to want him back, I think. But man, it's it just kind of terrifies me how we're set up in that way. So I don't know. The thing is, if you lose Judge, what is this offense? What is it? I don't know. It's all just, oh boy, in my head.
I wonder if they do give 8 at 35, because then that's $280 million, which isn't, it's a...
That would get pushed to 3. I think it has to be a $300 million deal.
You think it has to be $300 million? So then it would probably be then 7 or 6 for like 38.
Maybe it's something like that. We'll see. Other outfielders are not really a sexy crowd. Andrew Benintendi, no. Brandon Nimmo, JD Martinez, Michael Brantley, Trey Mancini. Who's that? Mitch Haniger, Joey Gallo. I'm just messing around.
It's rough. It is a rough outfit. If you're Aaron Judge, you're also just foaming at the mouth knowing that there's nobody else around but you.
Right. There's no good backup. I mean, it's next year, I believe, that you get a good amount of guys, but I could be wrong about that. But yeah, is there one that you think is the best to go after right now? I mean, I've been seeing some things about Brandon Nimmo that just kind of surprised me, but maybe I'm just not as well versed with Brandon Nimmo to consider him an elite outfielder. But I've been seeing $100 million contracts or something along those lines. Of all these, who do you think the team should be focusing on?
Sorry, I just completely... You remember Michael Conforto and how he just never got signed?
Never.
How is that?
Because of his shoulder.
Still, that's...
His shoulder was messed up, yeah.
It's got to be really bad. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It really is not great. I do think that you can see Michael Brantley get a nice little, like, maybe 1 or 2 year deal, maybe with a team like Miami. Like, he could still put bat to ball, and if you say, you know what, you're just our DH, I still think he can have a offensive, you know, a productive season for you. He only played, you know, 64 games this year, but he had a 127 WRC+. He hit .288 this year, which was his lowest average since 2013. When he's played over 50 games, that's unbelievable. So it wouldn't surprise me if a team is like, yeah, he's not really sexy, but there might actually be an interesting market for a guy who, yeah, I understand he's not going to do much defensively for you, but could hit 300 out of the DH for you, signing with like a not great team. I don't know about JD Martinez. I don't know about Trey Mancini. Mitch Haniger, I think they find a way to make him settle back in with Seattle. Brandon Benintendi is an interesting one too. I mean, he obviously came to New York and
got hurt right away, and it stinks. I still feel like he should sign with them.
Maybe
we'll see what happens there.
He's young too. He's gonna be what, 29? No, he's gonna be 20. He's still be 28 when the season will begin. Really good season for him last year.
Really funny to me. Like, we're 34. Hi guys, yeah. We're aging ourselves now, and I have friends who are 29. And I know many of them. It's like, yeah, I'm the old one here, you know?
Yeah.
And we're talking about Benintendi. Like, Benintendi's like, you know, 5 years. He was in middle school when I was a senior. Oh, boy. and relievers. We have Craig Kimbrell, Kenley Jansen, and Taylor Rogers. Who of this crop do you think are going to be the most sought after?
Maybe Taylor Rogers. Like Craig Kimbrell kind of had a weird fall off towards the end of the season there, where he lost the closer job. Kenley Jansen, a better season, obviously still has those like terrifying health concerns. This would have been a great crop 4 years ago. Obviously, yeah. The biggest name off the market with the Mets re-signing Edwin Diaz, which will be really interesting. So I think it is Taylor Rogers. I do love, you know, I don't. It's funny, you look at like a lot of these teams that have been really dominant. And yeah, of course, they are able to acquire a good amount of relievers at the trade deadline or stuff like that. But I feel like a lot of them are good because they are just able to find these relievers and turn them into elite relievers, right? Like the Dodgers turn guys into elite relievers. The Yankees are able to do that through their farm. The Rays are obviously fantastic. The Orioles started to do it really well last year. So it's funny when we're talking about signing relievers, it's like, well, why would I want to spend any money when I'm able to do that through the farm? You know? So I almost feel that
relievers feel like either you're an absolute elite one, or it's just not something you want to pursue. I mean, other names out there are Aroldis Chapman. You have Tommy Canley. You have Adam Ottavino, Pierce Johnson, Seth Lugo, Trevor May, David Robertson, Julie Rodriguez, Chad Green. It's really tough at this moment. And this is ranking by projected war, but who knows? Chad Green should do better, but is he okay? You know, I believe he's getting Tommy John, so you're not really expecting much next year, but maybe he'd assign somewhere for 3 years. It's relievers feel like one of those things where he just kind of pops up and they do great because it's a smaller sample and you have a farm system where like, all right, you throw hard, just here you go. And some guys figure it out, some don't, and that's it. You trade midseason for other options. You trade for guys like Wandy Peralta who are bad and then all of a sudden are good. You know, it's a weird thing. So going after, say, Craig Kimbrell, Kenley Jansen, Taylor Rogers, maybe not the biggest signings. There is a lot of expectation that Kenley's going to sign with the Miami Marlins, for example. But really, there isn't much out there either there. And no, you do not want Aroldis Chapman. First base. Is there anything else you want to add, you know, with closers fast before we go to first base?
Thank you. No, not really. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I think it's very telling that when you look at reliever ERA, like it's all the playoff teams, right? It's like the best teams in baseball. And that's for a reason. And to me, that says like those teams are growing their own talent. Some of them were acquired via trade, obviously, like we said, but like, maybe Philly wants to get another reliever. But like, I don't know. It just, I think it doesn't really seem worth it. First base was made much more interesting by the opt-out of Anthony Rizzo. I thought that was kind of interesting. Makes sense, I guess, from a financial perspective, but I really thought he was going to try and continue to be a Yankee.
No, he's still going to be a Yank, in my view. I think Rizzo's going to sign with them. It just is too good of a fit. I think he enjoyed playing there. I'd be really shocked if the Yankees and Rizzo didn't come to an agreement.
You think he was just opting out to try and get a little bit more money? And
yeah.
They're going to re-sign him.
Yeah, makes sense. Yep. I mean, yeah. The other options here, Jose Abreu, I'm pronouncing him right. Look at that. Josh Bell, Brandon Drury, who we didn't mention in the outfield discussion, theoretically, too. Jace Peterson, Brandon Belt, Carlos Santana, Matt Carpenter, Yuli Gurriel. So it's really, to me, is just about Abreu and Bell and Drury at this point. How are you feeling there?
I'm trying to take a look and see who, Yeah, the Astros are going to need a first baseman because Yuli's gone, and right now it's
he's 39, by the way.
Say it again.
He's 39.
That's unbelievable. Right? That's pretty wild. I wonder if they do go ahead and sign Jose Abreu. That would be a pretty fun signing to have him down in. Like, that does kind of make sense, right? Like, you have to figure his power is going to play well. I'd have to take. Let me take a look while you talk about where you're going. Where Jose Abreu?
I could see Brandon Belt even being something. Just feels like a Houston signing. Abreu, I don't think is going to go back to the White Sox, and you might see something like Josh Bell get pursued there, or maybe they're like, you know what, Andrew Vaughn, it's time for you to go at first base. That's might be what happens instead. I imagine the Yankees are going to be interested in Bell or Rizzo and seeing what they can make out of that. If it's not Rizzo, then they move to Bell, who can be a lefty for them if they need as well at the bag. But I'm trying to think of other good fits here. The Rangers have Lowe, the Mariners. Who's the Mariners first baseman? Is it Ty France? No. I can't remember. It's not Pete, Pete Alonso's covered by the Mets. You got Atlanta's fine with Matt Olson. I'm trying to think of like who are the guys that would think this is their window and pursue a first baseman. It's not too many, really, that I'm considering right now. Maybe the Twins? Who's the Twins first baseman right now?
Who's the Twins first baseman? Sorry, it was a very deep down a rabbit hole about Jose Abreu. Luis Arraez.
Oh, okay.
Well, he's a utility man, so I guess it could theoretically be anyone.
Sure. I don't know. I mean, Abreu, I don't know if he's going to get paid all. He's 36. You're going to see a short deal wherever he goes. So maybe a stopgap for a team that does like their first baseman, but maybe just wants someone else to share the load. I don't know. We'll see what happens there. Brandon Drury is really the interesting one to me. I really dig Brandon Drury. I think his gains from this year were legitimate and based a lot on swing decisions. And I'm curious where he lands. Maybe he comes back to the Yankees a second time. That'd be fun.
It looks like Abreu actually goes opposite field a lot with his home runs. Considerably more than league average. League average about 12% for opposite field home runs. He's up at around 16% with just about 51% of his home runs pulled. So it's not like the Crawford boxes he would particularly be able to take advantage of, but he would be able to take advantage of that shortish right field. But then again, I wonder if that makes him an interesting candidate for the Yankees, a righty who might be able to use the short porch to his advantage with a lot of opposite field home runs if they don't want to sign Rizzo.
It's possible. Yeah, that could be an interesting fit, especially a short-term deal while they figure it out later. Something's going to be signed here for the Yankees. Bell, Abreu, Rizzo, one of those three. Maybe the whole Brandon Belt thing, too, is like their super backup. But something will happen here. They won't have DJ LeMahieu at first.
So I wonder which, now we're getting real deep, baby. Which right-handed batter for the Yankees pulled the most home runs for them in 2022?
Which right-hander pulled the most home runs for them in 2022?
Which right-hander went opposite field the most with their home runs in 2022?
That would be Stanton.
Stanton, yeah, probably has to be, right?
I mean, I think so. Judge does pull some. I mean, theoretically, just by number, it's probably Judge.
Ooh, God.
Percentage-wise, it might be Stanton.
You are 100% correct. 16 total for Judge, but just 26%. 15 total for Stanton at 49%.
There you go. Let's go. Stanton, I got to say, Stanton home runs are so funny. They always look like they're foul, but they're not. They just go so hard that before it can hook foul, it lands, you know.
We need to introduce another caveat. I was looking overall on the year. Let's take a look at Justin Yankee Stadium. The person who Stanton had 10.
Could be in there. Yeah,
Gleyber Torres number one. Nick crushing that round of Yankee trivia. That was unbelievable.
I'm right. Shocked considering that you guys know me and hitters, and I don't actually really focus that hard on the Yankees.
Yeah, that's true. But still, I don't know. I'll tweet about it later. Jose Abreu's going to the Yankees. You heard it here first.
Yeah, there we go. We're going to move on to the second baseman, unless you got anything else you want to add there.
No, I didn't even know we had any.
Yeah, right. You left it off completely.
Because there's Turner, nothing.
Could be the Drury could be, but Gene Segura. Nah. Cesar Hernandez, Jose Iglesias, Aledmys Diaz, who looked terrible in the postseason. Josh Harrison. There's like nothing. Do you want Robinson Cano? Jonathan Villar? Do you want Camargo?
You okay. Got him. You want
you
Robinson
got him. He's yours.
You got him, baby.
You got him. Last He's one. Yours. Last one we got is Wilson Contreras. And catcher and Mike Zunino and Omar Narváez. Now, when Sean Roberts was putting together his predictions for where he thinks the top 35 free agents are going to go, he put initially the Guardians for Wilson Contreras. And I actually said no, because the Guardians don't spend money. The most expensive contract they had was Edwin Encarnacion. It's like $64 million was their like highest one. Then Asher Dretel puts out his fantastic where he thinks every team is going to go, or like where it's just like a bold one of like the perfect move for every team. And he put Wilson Contreras for the Guardians. And it was more of like a bolder thing. And it's pretty funny to me. I can see Sean being like, Nick, like what? You let him do it, not me. I don't think it's going to happen, but there's a thought that, well, maybe Wilson Contreras goes to the Guardians. They need a catcher. They have money to spend. They've had money to spend for a while. They haven't done it. Do you think Wilson Contreras ends up as a Guardian?
No, I don't.
See, there you go, Sean. See?
I don't. I also just don't think that they're going to really prioritize a hitting catcher. I think they're going to try and find a guy who is the best. Like Omar Narváez is, I believe, an overall better defensive catcher.
Vasquez could be there. Austin Hedges could return.
Yeah.
It's just Tucker Barnhart.
Think about their pitching first approach. You know what I mean? They also have a top 10. One of the top 10 prospects in their system is a catcher. So you'd have to figure they'd probably want to give him a shot. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know how that catcher panned out last year. I could take a look. This is Brian Lavastida, I think.
Hey, you're the one who took Duolingo. So
yeah, he was not very good offensively last year. Maybe he's very good in terms of framing or something. Does that even matter anymore? Is that going to impact people's free agent signing decisions? It might not. Framing will go the way of the dodo probably in 2024. So I don't know. But yeah, I don't know if I see them really opening up the pocket for that.
Well, all right. So that's our free agent pod. We're going to have a wild thoughts very quickly. I know we have, because my favorite section, in fact, I think you actually have one.
I do. I shared it with you at a brunch. And
yeah,
I
had a brunch.
I'm so congested. I'm very happy that I remembered it because it like popped into my head a couple weeks ago. And I was like, oh, my God, this just happened. In the final series in Japan, the championship of Japan, it is the first team to 4 wins, just like here. However, if you have a tie, the game is over and that game does not count. I absolutely love that. Why? It makes home field advantage all the more special. It's very exciting to think about, okay, it's a 2-2 game. It's now the bottom of the ninth. If I can do it here, we win, the game's over. If not, I've squandered my opportunity to win a game at home. I love adding more baseball games when we want to. If it is 3-3, by the way, and it is the deciding game, then they will play until the game is over and then declare their fourth winner. But I love the fact that it will then lead to deeper games, right? Like if you're not able to use your ace the way that you want to, and your offense can't contribute the way that it needs to, and it's a tie game, that opportunity is squandered. I don't know. I think it's a very, at first I was like, that's so dumb. We never have ties in baseball. But while I do love extra inning games, it is kind of fun to think that, all right, the home team couldn't do it here. So we're going on to the next game.
All right. Well, that's a good wild thought. I'm so happy that you have a wild thought, Fast. You know what my wild thought is?
Yes.
What is it, Fast?
I don't know. I thought you said, do you know my wild thought? Or do you want to know what my wild thought is?
Oh, I see. Yes. Oh, yeah. I gotcha. My wild thought is, what an idea this is a wild thought. Maybe when you're up 1-0 in a World Series game, you leave your best pitcher on the mound and let him pitch out of the jam in the most important moment of your season. That was all of us at the bar when it was happening. Yeah, you're reenacting us as we saw him leave the mound.
I was saying Boo Earns.
Yeah, there you go. That's my wild thought this week. The pitcher of the week, Fast, who'd you think it was?
Carlos Rodon.
With a 2.88 ERA, 103 WHIP, 178 innings. And in fact, was Carlos Rodon.
I didn't know he threw that many innings this year.
He did. He did, wow. Fast. You notice how I kind of skirted around his stats when we were talking about him?
Yeah,
I didn't want to give it away. Yeah, Carlos Rodon is pretty dang good, y'all. But that's going to do for this episode of the Nick and Alex Baseball Show. Thank you all for listening. We will be around this offseason. We've got so many baseball things to talk about because the offseason doesn't exist. It does not exist if we don't let it exist. But I'm so excited, Fast. We have an actual offseason, a proper one, yes. A big real season for the first time since 2019. Can you believe that? That's insanity. And I can't wait to experience all of it with all of you. But this is the Nick Alex Baseball Show. My name is Nick Pollock.
And I am Alex Fast. We'll talk to you guys soon.